Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the whole crew today, Jacob Kanzler, Lauren Gibbons, John Rurink, and Craig Mauger. A little later, we're going to have Pamela Pugh Smith, candidate for the State Board of Education, joining us. But first, we're all talking about the debate. We've been talking about it for the last hour. We're going to talk about it for another 15 minutes or so. We're going to go around the room quickly, say who won the debate, and then kind of take off from there. Jacob, we'll start with you. Who won the debate last night?
Well, you're going to hear a lot of us say this, but I mean, a lot of us are in agreement. We heard a lot of the same things. It seemed like it was kind of a wash, but I'm going to say edging out with Snyder in terms of some of the confidence I saw from him in terms of going on the attack. I think going over the moderators and wanting to attack the Dems' points line by line and wanting to go over that, that stuck out to me. So I'd say Snyder edged out.
Lauren?
Yeah, I would say that Schauer had a lot of places where he could have really gone after Snyder on a few big issues. You know, Snyder's not the perfect candidate either, but he didn't go after him as much as he could have. So I think that Snyder won just in that fact alone.
Okay. Missed opportunities. We're going to hit on that a little later. John, who was your victor?
I think the governor probably won because two things. Number one, Mark Schauer came into this debate. He had to score a body blow. He had to score some points in order to change the dynamics of the race. He's down six. I don't think that he did. The other reason is I think Mr. Schauer hurt himself, and it didn't get covered a lot in the press, but part of this debate, he had made a commitment to a 10-minute scrum with the media. He didn't show up. He sent last-minute U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow. I think, actually, Kyle, we've got some audio of that. I would like to play it.
Yeah, we actually do have audio of that clip, John. Let's play it right now.
Did you say Mark's not going to come
on? No, Mark, no, he won't. He won't be doing this.
Yeah. So I think he's feeling very good, and he's very confident of our ability to answer questions. So.
Why isn't he here? Is there a health issue? Why isn't he joining us?
I think he's just decided at this point in time to let us answer any questions and feels good about the debate. And he and his wife are spending time with their family and feel that he has said what he needs to say this evening. And as Gretchen said, our leader said in the Senate, I think his performance and what he believes in speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
And so that basically is
Didn't he agree to come up here for 10 minutes as part of
the honestly, I can't answer that. I don't know if he did or not, you'd have to ask the campaign, but I can tell you that there are a whole lot of smiles in the room with family and friends. And as somebody who's grown up my whole life in Michigan, and I'm very lucky my whole family's still here, what I want is a Michigan that works for everybody and gives everybody a fair shot. And what I saw on stage was a Governor Mark Schauer who would make sure that that happened.
So there's, I think, the two areas where he didn't measure up, and he lost an opportunity by not living up to his commitment to that scrum.
Mauger, what do you think?
I think on the blow-by-blow, I think they were about even. But going into the debate, I think Schauer had the chance to gain a lot more ground, and Snyder had the chance of losing more in this debate, and I just don't think it happened. So I think from that perspective, Snyder protected the small lead that he has in the polls, and Schauer wasn't able to gain much ground.
And I think that, and I'm going to agree, and I'm going to make it unanimous, I believe, that Snyder won this debate. I think he had the home field advantage going in anyway. The town hall-style debate is something that he's more comfortable with. He's been doing town halls for 4 years now. And whereas Schauer, this is really kind of the first time on a statewide stage, and I don't think he showed the presence or the command that Snyder did throughout. If you're thinking about this a week later, I think you're going to think more about what Snyder did as opposed to what Schauer did. And that's why I think in the end, I'm going to give the edge to the governor on this. But I'm very curious to see what the polls are going to say afterwards, because in the end, it really matters what the voters think. I mean, we can look back at some ads. Remember when Terry Land had her coffee cup ad? Initially, there were a lot of folks who thought that was a brilliant ad, and then it fell flat with the public, and the public hated it. So maybe Snyder's over-aggressive nature doesn't play well to the folks at home. home. But I think for us who are scoring the debate and watching it and looking for certain things, he obviously came out ahead. Lauren, I want to hit your point here on missed opportunities. And there were several in this one. Talk about one where you think he particularly missed out on.
Oh, well, I think the big obvious one that we'd kind of been talking about a little bit already is gay marriage. That, and he also didn't bring up anything about you know, women's issues, which is something that the Democrats have been hitting on very hard for the past year, and that just didn't come up at all.
Where was Lisa Brown in that debate? Was she anywhere to be seen, John?
I did not see her. But remember, though, the media was watching it from a room where they had a big screen. I wasn't in the auditorium with the candidates, so she might have been in there. I didn't see her. So.
Jacob, what could he have done on education that could have maybe landed things home a little better?
You know, maybe given less of a squishy answer. I mean, I talked about verifiable sources from the Senate Fiscal Agency. I mean, I don't know. I think people came away more confused on the education stuff at the beginning because both guys just said what they had to say and moved on. I don't think any voters got any clear answers off of that.
Craig, if we're doing so well with education, if we're funding it at $1 billion more, why do we have 55 schools still in deficit? Why are there so many schools that are still getting per pupil funding allowance cuts than they did under Granholm? It seems like that was a pretty clear answer, right? I just came up with that.
Yeah, it seems like he could have got specific. Why are so many schools closing? Why are schools being dissolved? Governor, you know, how can you say that? Well, this is the reality on the ground. But that's not what he said. He told people, go ask a teacher, go ask someone that's in the schools, which, you know, maybe doesn't score the points that he could have on that. But he also, I think, really botched the question on minimum wage. Right to work wasn't talked about that much. And I mean, Shower is the guy who got pepper sprayed during the pepper sprayed, right?
Yeah.
During the protest at the Capitol over right to work. Seems like he could have mentioned that.
Right. Governor, did you feel like you showed leadership during Right to Work? Didn't you get bullied into signing a bill you didn't want to sign by the big business interests and Dick DeVos, somebody who the voters rejected in 2006? I was waiting for that.
Or something to the effect, you're calling me a politician, you passed the most divisive law that we've had in a long time in the state.
No dementia. Were you surprised by that, John?
I was surprised about that. I was also surprised that he didn't use the minimum wage argument to say, Governor, you only wanted this on the ballot because you're going to get a higher minimum wage. And this is a pattern of abuses that this administration has pursued legislatively. The first EM law was overturned. You came back with another one. The minimum wage law, you didn't want that to go in front of the ballot.
Wolves.
Twice you've kind of went around the people on this issue. And this is a pattern. And why is that? So, I mean, there's another opportunity that he did miss.
We could have talked more about maybe jobs and the economy. Has the economy really gotten better since you've taken office? Now, you can make the argument that it's because of the auto bailout that for the year ending 2010, 2011 is when we saw the most increase in our economy here in the state of Michigan. How much of that had to do with Barack Obama actually improving the economy with the auto bailout? And how much of it has really had to do with anything that you've done in this state as far as right to work or your big tax cut and the Michigan business tax? Because we really haven't seen a heck of a lot of growth. We didn't really get into that. And if we did, I forgot it.
Well, the problem is, and I think both sides are going to be able to point to different stats. I mean, Snyder's going to pull out his 300,000 jobs created. I think Schauer mentioned or could have mentioned, you know, where we are at unemployment rate in the states. So, I mean, I know that could be a wash, but at the same time, Schauer still has that opening from Snyder's own words of saying, if you haven't felt recovery, you know, you're going to feel it soon. I mean, he could have easily attacked that more. Maybe it was mentioned once, but I'm not sure.
It never really seemed like Schauer was engaged in this debate at all from the get-go. Talk about at the beginning, before the debate even happened, there was a rally that Schauer didn't attend.
There was a rally at 4:30. There were about 50, 60 people there, arranged by the Democratic Party. And when I arrived, I kind of hung out longer than I probably would have because we were told that the candidate was going to arrive there in his bus. He did arrive, but we were also told he was going to speak. To the group. He didn't speak, and there seemed to be a little disappointment about that when he went into the auditorium. The crowd was later told he was going to be attending a meeting with them and speaking to them later after the debate. So I think he just missed an opportunity there. He missed an opportunity, as I said earlier, by talking directly to the media.
You know, and I think there's a difference, too, about getting psyched up and psyched out. And I think maybe there was a little bit more, too much over prep on the Schauer campaign, and he never really got comfortable in what was going on here. I'm going to make a softball analogy here. I'm a softball coach, right? You guys know I'm a softball coach. On Thursday, we played our championship game. All right, our championship playoff. Now, we could have sealed the deal 2 weeks ago, but we psyched ourselves out into making this feel like this was the most important thing that had ever happened to us, winning this lower league softball league. And we played tense, we played stiff, and we lost both games and played ourselves into a championship game. The message that I gave the team for our championship game is, why are we here? It's because we love to play. We love to play softball, and we love the company. We love being around each other, and we went out there and we smoked this other team, okay? Schauer seemed like, going in there, that he had been so overprepped with facts and stuffed with figures that he never really related or felt open about what he was talking about until he was talking about gay marriage. Outside of that, it just seemed like it was just the same old talking points we've heard over and over again, and I think it's reflective in the fact that he didn't talk to the media. Did he, you know, should the media feel kind of stiffed here? Yeah, they should. But I think the bigger issue here is not that he didn't talk to the media, but he didn't feel comfortable enough talking to the media afterwards. That's what I think is more important. He didn't feel comfortable talking to the crowds. He didn't feel comfortable talking to the media. And if we have any takeaway from it going forward is, at what point then is he going to feel comfortable? And it was an opportunity lost, really.
That's the kind of inspiration, that softball speech that we work with here at MERS. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, we got to get New Jersey, Sean. We haven't had New Jersey in a long time. Okay, so I'm off my soapbox a second. You guys had some great commentary, Lauren and Jacob, before we talked about this, on the Twitter. And I wasn't following the Twitter wars much. Jacob, what did you see in the Twitter exchange? And do you think it was very beneficial?
No, because, I mean, besides people just doing the play-by-play, I mean, a lot of the politicos that jumped on, I mean, it was actually more misleading than just cheerleading. I mean, I think a candidate would say something, then the opposing party, you know, a hack for the opposing party would attribute them saying something that was completely wrong. I wish I could give you an example, but, I mean, they just kind of exaggerated maybe what they would have said. It really looked like slander, to be quite honest. And I mean, then after the debate, I mean, I don't know if this is common practice, but I mean, just both sides were just so adamant that, you know, each other won and the other one was horrible. I mean, I mean
that's pretty common.
Yeah. It didn't add anything to the conversation, Lauren?
Well, you know, I said earlier, it kind of felt like a caricature of what I was actually watching, you know, because I had the Twitter screen on my computer and I was obviously watching the debate on television, and so I was watching what was happening, but then like Jacob said, you just get all of these really, really partisan, like, oh gosh, that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard kind of thing, and it was just overblowing every single line that either side had, and I just don't know how an undecided voter would be able to sift through all that garbage and kind of figure out what they wanted to do. I don't know. I mean, you find some of that in every debate, but I think this one was particularly just everything. Yeah, everything that was out there almost.
John, we watched the gubernatorial debate in 2010 with Virge Bonaro and Rick Snyder. Who did better, Virge Bonaro or Mark Schauer?
Probably the Lansing mayor did better.
Oh, why was that?
I think he was just a little more clear. I think he was a little more prepared. Not that Char wasn't prepared. I think he just came across stronger.
Final takeaways, Craig?
I was impressed with Snyder. I think this is one thing that I did want to mention. And the fact that he said, I'm going to confront these issues, and I'm going to choose to do that. When Nolan Finley asked the question about the economy, and he said, our recovery has not been that robust, something to that effect, Snyder chose to go back and said, wait a second, Nolan, it has been robust, and he gave stats. I thought that was kind of a metaphor for a lot of the things in the debate. Snyder was making a choice to confront some of these issues, and I think that's something that a lot of people in the public will be happy about, to hear the governor actually talk specifically about a lot of these controversies and important issues. But he didn't do that on all the issues. So.
Right. Where we heard Mark Schauer basically say, trust me, I know what I'm doing.
on roads, we didn't get an exact answer on his plan for roads and some of the other things, yes.
You know what was interesting, John, and Craig mentioned this, that one of the people in the audience smiling a lot of the time, Tim Walberg.
Tim Walberg.
That's one
former opponent of Mr. Shower.
Two times. Very, very Shower combative.
Shower took him out, so he was probably happy to see. I'm sure he assumed or felt that the governor won, and he was probably enjoying.
He appeared to have a very good seat, like toward the middle, maybe down in front. I couldn't tell.
He's not an undecided voter. How does he get a seat like that?
I don't know.
Somebody probably thought having Tim Walberg in the audience would shake Mark Shower.
Maybe he thought it would help in his reelection campaign.
He just likes politics. He's there to do what he enjoys, just like you told your team.
Oh,
that reminds me, John, we've got polling in that race coming out very soon.
That's right. Good.
Yeah, either today or tomorrow.
I do have to say one thing about the Twitter conversation. You know, you watch a presidential debate and you follow Twitter for the comedy. Like, what are the jokes people are making? I was kind of not excited about the joke. There weren't jokes. Like, where were the comedy? Where was the jokes? It wasn't there.
There was no comedy. There was just viciousness.
The highlight was Dennis Lennox's analysis of Snyder's wardrobe and other people's wardrobe, and the neck size being too small. And I left me just thinking, like, is my neck size too small? Like, do I have the right shirt?
That was pretty.
And it's something different to the conversation. I don't know if it added to the conversation, but it was something different than what I was seeing.
That's what I go to Twitter for. Something different. And that was it. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of wardrobes, Kyle Mullen's jacket got a lot of references on Twitter.
Well, you know, that isn't the first time I've worn that jacket. I've been wearing that jacket since 2007, for crying out loud. But I only haul it out now basically in the fall, because even though it's a tomato bisque, it looks more orange on the screen. And so I kind of save it for that.
You are the only man I know that describes the jacket of his as tomato bisque.
Tomato bisque.
Well, it is tomato bisque, though. That's what it said on the tag.
But it looks orange.
Well, I'd like to thank the Nayerts and Dennis Lennox and Tom Shields and Deb Muchmore for all pointing out my jacket. That was very nice. Thank you. All right, now we're going to head over to the interview portion of the podcast.
Joining me on the other end of the line, Pamela Pugh Smith. She is a Democratic candidate for the State Board of Education. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to ask you, first of all, about this issue of Common Core. This is an issue that I heard a lot about at the Republican convention, and it seemed to be the standard talking point for Republicans that this is somehow a federal invasion into local control on the subject of education. I wanted to get your position on this. Has this been a subject that's been overblown by the political right?
I believe that it's a subject that's been overblown. There's a myth that is definitely resonating and coming from the right, the conservative party, that Common Core is something that's being pushed down by the federal government. That's far from true. Common Core is something that has been developed by foundations and is a way of standardizing or making more consistent how standards are rolled out. It's not even a curriculum, and it is not something that has been pushed down from federal government, but Common Core is something that has been put together. Michigan has also been able to give their input on what Common Core looks like. And again, it's not a curriculum. It's guidelines. It's a framework. Curriculums can be decided by local communities.
Common Core is something that you promote that the state continue on in connection with the Smarter Balance assessment?
Absolutely. I believe that any assessment that is given needs to be tied into Common Core. And again, as stated, Common Core is something that allows consistency not only within Michigan but across the country. I would hate for a student to show up in college and not be prepared because the way that their learning has been standardized across districts or across state. This allows a student from anywhere to be able to show up and be more competitive because there has been this consistency.
One of the big important decisions that the next Board of Education is going to make is the next superintendent of schools, since Mike Flanagan has announced that he will retire in the middle of next year, 2015. What are the things that you're going to be looking for in the superintendent search? What kind of qualities would you like this person to bring to the job?
Right. So our current superintendent, Mike Flanagan, I definitely commend him. I know recently when educators in Detroit were looking at facing a 10% cut, he put his voice into the mix of that conversation, and it probably helped, and it did help those educators that to be removed from the table, so the educators weren't taking those additional cuts. I think that Mike Flanagan's recent call for tightening accountability of charter schools. I think that should be commended. With a new superintendent, we need someone who's able to really stand firm as we look at the expansion of charters. Me, myself, I think that charters, there should be a moratorium on charters until we can develop some sort of mechanism for ensuring accountability, to ensure that taxpayers' dollars are being well spent and not being misspent. So I think we need a superintendent that's going to stand firm on that, as well as really take a look at the education achievement authority and ready to dismantle that. So those are qualities that I would look for in a new superintendent, someone who can understand that, educators, we're losing educators, and that a way to keep educators is making sure that they're respected, making sure that they're adequately paid. And by doing that, we know that we have to stop siphoning money from our public education to charter schools. So looking at someone who really is able to stand firm on that.
Or one of the ways that you'll be successful in November is if Democrats show up and vote, obviously top of the ticket and party performance weighs heavily into these state board of education races. How do you feel Democrats are doing right now as far as energizing folks and getting them excited to vote on Election Day?
Look, Kyle, we've been all over the state. I mean, our whole ticket has been able to get out and about. We're traveling. I'm here in Saginaw, Michigan, so I'm able to get out here at home. But just going out in the state, and we've been having rallies, and the turnout has been phenomenal. I mean, people are showing up. People are angered by what this current administration has done, from the $1 billion in cuts to a public education, to the attack on our elderly. People are angered, and so I believe that they're going to show up. We have a very strong ticket. Mark Schauer did a phenomenal job last night in stating the differences between him and our current governor, and really showing that he's going to show up and get the job and be able to do the job for the working class families. And I believe that people are going to show up at the polls. I think that we're seeing that by the energy as we go to the different events, and we're having packed houses. So just continuing to remind people that day that it's November the 4th. And I know that people know what to do once they get to the poll.
Pamela Pugh Smith, candidate for the State Board of Education. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Kyle.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the crew here, Jacob, Lauren, John, and Craig. I'm Kyle Mlynn. Thanks to the Michigan Press Association for sponsoring this and every other podcast, sending out far and wide. You know what? We're talking about debates we'd like to see. Ideally, I'd love to see a Snyder Shower debate here on this podcast, and actually a Leanne Peters debate. But you know what? Haley Morris pointed out that I haven't really sent a formal invitation to both camps, and so I guess it doesn't happen unless I send out a formal invitation.
I mean, can we voice the invitation right now?
Well, we can, yes, absolutely. We invite Terry Lynn Land and Gary Peters to come upon our podcast and debate the issues, and we will put that up. Actually, we don't even wait till Monday. Shoot, I'll do it any other time, really. And if we can't get them, we'll take Haley Morris and Heather Swift for a debate. And I think actually that would be more
the
fun.
The two spokespeople. And we've
that'd
got
be a lot of fun,
two chairs sitting right here waiting for him.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
You know, that would be pretty fun.
It's official. It's official now. We don't need any negotiations. You know the place. We said any time. I think it's out there. We're good to go.
All right. Well, we'll see where that invitation goes. And until next week, I'm Kyle Mlynn. Take care.